There are those that just want to be left alone, and those that just won't leave them alone. Which one are you? The Ernest Hancock Show.
Mean when I say we have a difficult time ahead of us, but if we are to be prepared for it, we must first shed our fear of it. I stand here without fear because I remember that I am here not because of the path that lies before me, but because of the path that lies behind me. I remember that for 100 years we have fought these machines. And after a century of war, I remember that which matters most. We are still here! Tonight, let us make them remember. We are not afraid!
Yeah, we're not afraid here on Declare Your Independence with me, Ernest Hancock, in the BEA beautiful studios of Freedoms with an S, freedomsphoenix.com in Phoenix, Arizona. You know, we're on the air with Mary Ruart. Dr. Ruart has been a libertarian activist for a long time. She now sits on the Libertarian National Committee as a member there, and she's been involved in national politics. She's run for the VP nomination in the early 90s. She's, you know, well known. She's written the book Healing Our World, a kind of a view at libertarianism from the left and so on. And the attack, I've probably seen it. I don't know. I felt it in the mid 90s. You know, I don't know if Mary did or not. I saw this trend going towards the attack of the definition for since I become libertarian. I did my best to, you know, help just define it here in Arizona, and it's just gotten to where, you know, the mission needs to be done on a larger scale. But in reviewing, you know, we have the new book out, The Heart of a Libertarian, or the Mind of Some Libertarian, you know, written by Wayne Allyn Root. He's running for national chair to represent libertarianism. And I'm sure if he gets it, man, he's going to do it. I mean, he's going to be on Fox News, and they're going to give him every opportunity at the biggest megaphone to say what he thinks libertarianism is. Now, in his book, you said something, his criticism of liberals bordered on the, you know, hate speech. I got the network going. What the heck does that mean? So I got to ask you, man, what do you mean by that?
Well, he talks about the big liberal lie and all these, you know, he says, you know, liberals will never do this or never understand that. And they're lying, you know, cheating types. And he says this throughout the book. And, you know, if he said it about conservatives, too, at least it would be balanced. But it's clear that he is extolling conservatives. And, you know, this hate liberal speech, which I think is very damaging to our ideals, because we talk about how we are fiscally conservative and socially liberal. And he can't even say that. He says we should use the word socially tolerant because liberal is such a bad word. and you know, the idea of having a phrase like that is to show people that we are beyond left and right and that we have aspects of our philosophy will appeal to both conservatives.
He advocates that we I've been on the campaign trail with him for months, and I've gone dozen states. I mean, just back and forth. In fact, I go to Michigan this weekend. And his whole thing is there is an enormous market share out there in the Tea Party, Palin, conservative right, money, vote, this, that. He goes, if we embrace that, and then we'll be the libertarian wing of the conservative movement and all will be peaches and cream. And the argument against that's what?
Well, actually, that's just the opposite. What will happen is we'll get absorbed into that. Instead of voting libertarian, people will continue to vote, as I said, Republican. Republican, for Ron Paul, Republicans, the Republican Liberty Caucus. I mean, Ron Paul has already staked his claim, if you will, in that arena. The Tea Party people are interested in Ron Paul. They aren't interested in the Libertarian Party. Now, the way that we get votes, in my opinion, not to mimic, because people will not vote for us.
No, we got to be better. Well, we'll talk about it more when we come back with Mary Ruart. Dr. Mary Ruart on Declare Your Independence in just a little bit.
It's time to declare your independence with Ernest Hancock. To be a part of the show, call 1-800-313-9443. And now, live from the studios of Freedom's Phoenix, Ernest Hancock.
Welcome back to Declare Your Independence. With me, Ernest Hancock, and you can declare your independence all on your own. You don't need to do it with me or Dr. Mary Ruart. You can do it on your own. You know how you do it? You go, I declare my independence. See how easy that was? You don't even need a government form. You know, one thing I wanted to talk to you about, Mary, is that yesterday we played, you know, there's a CNBC segment they had with Dr. Paul on it. And the point that I'm making with this, it's just like a minute, you know, and a half or something like that. But the point that I'm making is that they, if you don't have the support of the populace, if they're not rallying to you, if they're not giving you money, if they're not, you know, then you're doing something wrong.
Mm-hmm.
And that is the argument a lot of people will come into it. You guys are just doing, you have all this opportunity and you've been squandering it. But a lot of people, they don't understand. We've had the Natural Law Party, 50 state ballot status. New Alliance Party, 50 state ballot status. It's just in the 90s. You had the Green Party. You got the Constitution Party. You got, you know, party, party, United We Stand, Reform Party. You got party, party, party. But the Libertarians always stay. And the reason is because they represent a core, a hard core, a no compromise position of something that is of import to somebody. And the thing is that they want to try and use that to brand something else that they want. They want to have that what makes us viable in all the turmoil and what's going on. They need that. They have to have that to wrap it around whatever crap that they're selling. And I'm going, you know, that's, I understand what you're trying to do, but I don't think they're going to be able to do it. And anybody that has, and I mean, they may take over the shiny badges of the party, you know, like, that don't matter. You know, that's my whole point for doing this. I'm going, look, man, you guys can do whatever you want. I just want to make it very clear to the planet what it is that you've done in convention. Either you are joining this global, worldwide Lovolution, or you're not. And this is information that we need. Either way, I'm keep doing what I'm doing. I've been doing this a long time. I'm good. But the thing is that we need to know, is the definition of libertarianism going to be defended inside the party, or is it not? And if it's going to be in the minds of this next generation, then I feel a lot safer now over the past couple of years that we're fine. I'm not afraid. I am not afraid. The only thing that we need to know is whether the Libertarian Party is going to be part of this movement or not. And I could think of nothing better than to have an example of what it is that's being offered than my good buddy Wayne Allen Root. I mean, you know, bring it on, bring it on, bring it on. Because he is such a perfect, proud, chest-out example of exactly what we have been in opposition to all these decades. And as time shows how right we are, you start to see the long-term trend. We have history on our side, and that's what this point is of the CNBC segment. The argument that they're making is Europe is going down in flames. And, you know, is America insulated that from that somehow? Heck no, we're the ones that caused it. You know, we're part of it. You know, the dollar is going to go. And here we have them going on Dr. Paul saying, yeah, you've been, you know, a gold bug all these years since the Bretton Woods Agreement, you know, collapsed in 71 and final tentacles of any kind of connection or threads to our dollar and gold went away. And, you know, but if you didn't go in the stock market, you lost all kinds of money. You wouldn't have made all this money on these ups and downs, Dr. Paul. You know, you don't know what you're talking about. Really? Let's see what he has to say about it.
Yeah, you know, I think that's a pretty good point. I think you could even point out to Greece. You know, you'd think by now the Greek people would realize what the problem is. We might realize it, and I certainly think I understand it. But 60% of the people are on the dole over there, so they're yelling and screaming and rioting, not because of the views I hold, but because they want more stuff. They don't want one penny cut. But you know why I don't worry about that is because the markets are more powerful than governments. The markets are even more powerful than the Fed. We fixed the price of gold at $35 an ounce for years, but we knew the market couldn't sustain it. You just can't print money and think that the ratio of dollars to gold would remain the same. So that's why we knew the Bretton Woods Agreement would break down. This is why we knew in the year 2000 that the gold price or the dollar would crash in measurement toward gold. So, but the market will answer that question, not the political people in Washington.
Congressman, you've been worried about it since 1971, though, and if you were betting against the markets, you would have lost a lot of money with that view.
Well, how would you say that? Because since 1971, systematically, you know, I was so foolish as to buy gold coins at $35 an ounce, and that was my reserve. See, I'm on a reserve gold standard, and I don't feel that badly about that, you know, because my reserves now are, you know, in pretty good shape because of that belief and conviction that I knew in 1971 that paper would lose its value. Now, the gold surge recently is people are discovering, oh, they're really printing money. Well, they've been really printing money for way too long. It's just that they're accelerating it, and you can expect a lot more price inflation. Matter of fact, we have a lot of price inflation already. If you look at the cost of medical care and education, the cost of government, the cost of food, many of these things are still going up, but the government says, oh, it's only 2%. There's no inflation, so we have license to print. No way, no way. They're just kidding themselves and they're kidding the American people that the Fed can keep doing what they're doing because the economic laws will bring this to an end and probably in not too distant future.
All right, Congressman Paul.
This is the point that I'm making, Mary. It doesn't matter. They can say and whine and complain and whatever they want forever. It makes no difference. It's math. You cannot do this economic and social engineering without freedom rearing its head in the free market in all kinds of ways. I have seen this. I was able to look at the forest much better, I think, from a more distant view here in Arizona, looking at national politics inside the party, outside the party, as an activist. And I'm saying, you know, this convention that's coming into St. Louis is essential in our understanding of what role the LP is going to play in this revolution that will not be contained. We have such an enormous number of new young people in this thing. There are more libertarians outside the Libertarian Party than inside. I mean, are you questioning that? You don't think so? I mean, what's your view on this?
Oh, no, I think you're exactly right. The LP is just the tip of the libertarian movement iceberg, maybe the most visible tip, but underneath we have hundreds of foundations throughout the country that are libertarian in nature. In the past, Ernie, I think you probably would agree that most people came into the movement through the Libertarian Party and then went out and did their educational thing or whatever it was.
After about two election cycles.
and you know, that's great. I mean, that's fine because people should go to where they feel like they can contribute the most. What I'm seeing now is the possibility that the Libertarian Party will cease to be that entry point and will cease to be really true to the philosophy. And I just, of course, as an activist being involved in the party that long, find that sad, but that may happen. That's always been our challenge. When we become as successful as we have been, then and stood the test of time as these other parties have fallen by the wayside, we're really the only one that's still standing with good ballot access. We're going to have people coming in just because we have that ballot access and wanting to impose their version, shall we say, upon the party, take it over, if you will. There's been different words used. And this is our challenge now. So
They've always been trying to do that. Ever since I even became aware of the word libertarian in the early 90s, that's exactly, you know, I tell you what my first experience with libertarian is. I met Gary Fallon. He's a candidate here. He was a Republican that went. They got all principled and everything. He's run for governor. He's a great guy, good friend of mine. And he was the first libertarian I met, and he was doing the speakers for the December 91 for the 92 election cycle when Dick Boddy was debating Andre Maru and everything for the nomination back in 92. And they asked me to be the luncheon speaker at the Arizona State Convention because I had been challenging election laws and all that kind of stuff. And they said, will you come in and talk to this about it? I could see my first convention of everything that I had, you know, gone to all the way Ninth Circuit on, challenging all these election laws. You had the people there, that one half represented by, you know, the state chairman at the time, Rick Tompkins, that would later run for presidential nomination against Brown in 96. He was there going hardcore libertarianism, Kathy Hare, Mike Duggar, Fallon, you know, a lot of these guys became good friends of mine. And then the other side, which is a group from Tucson, that were arguing, no, you shouldn't be challenging all this stuff, because then you take away the advantages that we get when we get to be the third party of a major ballot status here. We want to have the advantages. We want to have the free databases. We want to exclude other people from running. We want it. And I'm going, whoa. This battle has been going on since the first day that I have been experienced with the Libertarian Party. But I was fortunate that at the time, the people that were currently had the shiny badges were in opposition to selling out our principles. But as time went on, I saw this battle had been going on decades before. It continues. But you know what? Well, they're going to hit the button on us, so give us, Mary, go at it. Write down what you're going to say when she comes back. But I'm telling you, our entry point now is what? It's the internet. It's YouTube. Do we need the Libertarian Party? It'd be nice, though. It'd be nice.
There are those that just want to be left alone, and those that just won't leave them alone. Which one are you? The Ernest Hancock Show.
Yeah, don't stop believing. Don't stop believing here on Declare Your Independence. We're not stopping believing. We know what's going to happen. Freedom's going to rear its head. It already has. Now, I know you were chomping at the bit there, Mary. Go ahead.
I'm going to say you made a good point earlier, Ernie, when you said that in the past, our leadership have strived to maintain the true definition of the libertarian philosophy against a distortion. And I think this is what makes this particular time critical, because a lot of our leadership no longer fall into that camp. I mean, in 2008, we ran a presidential ticket where neither our presidential nor vice presidential candidate had an easy time stating the classical libertarian position about ending the war on drugs. They just couldn't do it. You know, Bob Barr went on Hannity and Combs, and they just nailed him to the wall on that. And finally, he said he wouldn't vote to legalize heroin and cocaine.
And these were dark days for a lot of libertarians. But there was a campaign, an effort, a strategy that they finally got what they had been screaming for. You know, you've been on the LNC for a long time, and I'm telling
We tested the hypothesis that if we had a well-known former congressman run on the top of our ticket, that we would get a lot of votes. And what we found out is we didn't. We didn't, as a percentage of the vote, which is the only really parameter that counts, we got just about what we've been getting all the rest of the time. And we actually had a great experiment going this election. Ron Paul was the only freedom-minded candidate in Louisiana. You know, Bob Barr wasn't on the ballot there. And Louisiana was a place where in the primaries, Ron Paul came in first or second, depending on which numbers you believed. Yet he only got 0.4% of the vote there. And that tells us something important, I think, Ernie. It tells us that even people who strongly support the ideas of freedom or a candidate like Ron Paul will sometimes feel in an election that they really need to vote for the lesser of two evils. They need to vote for somebody who they know has a chance to win. And so they take that route rather than speaking up and voting with their principles, so to speak. And that was played out in our election results, too. Bob Barr got the most votes in Indiana, where we had a great local slate of candidates, 1.1% there. In Texas, he got 0.7%. And he hadn't campaigned almost, I don't think he even was in Indiana, or if he was, it was very brief. In Texas, we had a good slate of candidates, so he got good vote totals there. And in his home state of Georgia, where he did campaign heavily, and they did have a good slate of candidates, he got 0.7%. Those were the highest vote totals. So what that shows, it's the local slate that supports the presidential slate and not vice versa in terms of vote totals.
You know, the one thing that I get criticized a lot for is that I don't trust the election computers. I mean, as time has gone on, for me to put all my eggs in the government, they said, basket, I'm not doing it.
And that's like, understandable. You know, there has been. And that's another thing. At this convention, we'll be talking about instituting electronic voting for our conventions, and it's so potentially fraught with fraud. I'm actually amazed that it's being considered.
Well, you know, we had a speaking engagement where we had, I think, the first major LNC chairman debate was in Austin, Texas, where they had the 50-state leadership conference. We had the all the states are invited. They come and they congregate there and they discuss such things. And, of course, the Libertarian National Committee was meeting and so on. So this was a good kickoff. And they tried to institute electronic voting there. And they tried twice and they couldn't get the machines to work.
Oh, I know. I was there, too. It was really a joke.
So I'm going, you know, seriously, are you really, come on, you know, this is, and of course it's people that, you know, you would question their desire to have an accurate vote anyway. So, you know, and we're not going to have at this convention, they're not going to use electronic vote. I mean, they wanted to, but I think after two failures on their most prominent opportunity, it failed. We're not going to be doing it this election cycle, are we?
No, but we are going to be voting on whether we can do it in our next convention.
I vote no.
I think most people will. I'm actually amazed that anybody thinks it's going to pass.
Well, this is – so I want to make sure that we understand the future of the philosophy because, you know, the Libertarian Party didn't come up with it. I mean, this was around for – a lot of times you'll have a party that will espouse a philosophy and they're kind of the source or bring it – you know, the Libertarian Party was a side effect of the philosophy, not the beginning of it.
Well, that's right. And, you know, when you talked about earlier the entry point being the Internet, I mean, that is a good point because now – If you wanted to get information about libertarianism, the best source was probably to enter the party and network with the people there. But now you can go on the Internet and you can, I mean, it's all over. You know, it's not a secret anymore. In fact, you can't burn the books the way you used to be able to. So, you know, it's always out there on the net. So I think that the good news about this is even if the party should fail at this point in time, and by fail, I mean fail to be true to its founding philosophy, that's not the only game in town anymore, and I think that the people who have worked in the LP for all this time can take great pride in the fact that by keeping the LP alive and up and being the entry point, that they have helped make this under-the-water network of educational institutions and things of this nature, the whole movement, grow without necessarily having elected people to really great positions.
Oh, and that's the only standard they want to use. How many people did you elect? And I'm like, how many minds have we freed? All this other, it won't happen all at once, but it will happen overnight. And the sleeping giant's about to awaken.
It's time for Declare Your Independence with Ernest Hancock. To be on the show, call 1-800-313.
The Matrix is a system, Neil.
4443.
That system is our enemy. But when you're inside, you look around, what do you see? Businessmen, teachers, lawyers, carpenters, the very minds of the people we are trying to save. But until we do, these people are still a part of that system, and that makes them our enemy. You have to understand, most of these people are not ready to be unplugged. And many of them are so inert, so hopelessly dependent on the system, that they will fight to protect it. Were you listening to me, Neo? Or were you looking at the woman in the red dress?
Oh, lots of red dresses out there. Lots of distractions. The people whose minds we are trying to free are so dependent on a system that they have to understand how much power and support and standard of living and peace and happiness and love they would have without dependency on the system. And you cannot declare your independence if you're dependent. Quit being dependent. Quit advocating for dependence. Quit looking for someone else or something else to advocate for yourself the freedom that you crave, need, desire, demand. And I see the that's what's going on inside the party right now. There's such a demand for just clarity. And that's what I hope to bring to this in my effort. But there are some people that they see nothing else other than, you know, it's a marketing thing. It's a, you know, how much money can we raise using a database and pinky swear we are, we want to something. And it's not about freeing other people. I want to talk to you, Mary, about in this segment. We have a long, 15-minute segment that we can go in what we predict is going to happen in the future. Because as the economy unwinds on a global scale, this is going to get much. It's going to be the greatest depression in human history. And I see at when they're going to start talking about what's next. I want it to be built on some fundamental principles that have been espoused by somebody somewhere. And the Libertarian Party has an opportunity to be at the most opportune time of the biggest decentralization of human activity and resources and advocacy for all that is humanity. Is the opportunity is now. And we're going to either be part of that or not. And quite frankly, I am of the opinion it doesn't matter. It's already happening. It's already begun. It's already locked in to the Libertarian Party. And the Libertarianism. And I remember the party being, it used to be, you had a little bit younger people, but the core, the people that show up, that go to the convention, they've been Libertarians a long time, but the average age is way up there. You would not expect that. A lot of people think the libertarianism and movement is represented by the youth, and it is. Libertarianism is represented by the youth. They're coming in by the gazillions. But inside the party, I don't know, a lot of gray hair. Tell me, what do you think the future is?
Well, yes, and that's because we've not been very good about recruiting those people. It's unfortunate because we had the great opportunity in 2008, and instead of embracing these people and embracing the people that Ron Paul had activated, our presidential ticket actually came out and insulted him, which resulted, of course, in him deciding not to be neutral any longer, but to endorse the Constitution Party. This was a great loss for us. The LNC actually got several emails from people. Or at least they came to our attention, I should say, about our candidates who were losing their campaigners because these people had been Ron Paul supporters, and when Ron Paul endorsed the Constitution Party candidate, they left our local activists' campaign, and this is very sad. So I think that's another reason that this convention coming up is so important. I think if we do go ahead and have for chair someone like Wayne Allen Root, who got on Ron Paul radio and repeatedly said that Ron Paul was naive about foreign policy. He wasn't even tactful about it, saying, I have some disagreements with Dr. Paul on foreign policy. No, he came right out and said that he thought Ron Paul was naive, and this turns the young folks off that are following Dr. Paul. So if we're going to have a chair like that, I think we're going to end up estranging the Ron Paul activists. What I hear from them, and as you said, Ernie, you and I were both in the For Liberty movement in a very prominent way. What I hear these people saying is, well, we were very disappointed in the Libertarian Party and the people they nominated for their ticket. We'll wait and see and give them one more chance. Well, this is our chance. If we elect somebody who is already considered in uncomplimentary terms, shall I say, among the Ron Paul activists, I think we're going to be in very bad shape in terms of trying to recruit these people. We'll have lost our big chance.
Well, the party will have lost that
chance.
That's
right. Movement's fine. And that's, maybe the LP's time has come. I don't know. Maybe we've done what we needed to do, and maybe it's time for the focus to be taken off the LP. I don't know. But I as somebody who's been in a long time and supported for a long time, I just hate to see us throwing away our golden opportunities as we've been doing.
I understand the sentiment, and I can feel the pain, but I you've known me a long time. And I tell you, Mary, I never, ever, ever put in the hands of a collective, even if you got an L after it, a libertarian, any collective, to advocate for the freedom that I insist upon for myself to advocate. What is the prime directive? I do not advocate. But you're driving on the government roads, and yeah, but you'll never get me to advocate for I'm going to steal from somebody to do it. It's just
sure.
So I understand all the arguments. We've been round and round and round. And if you go to ErnestHancock.org, that's my page for running for national chair, and we haven't really talked about my. That's not the point. My point is that if you go and you look at the debate that Wayne and I had just this last Monday last week in New York City. He has really emphasized, and that's why it's so good to have this discussion. I dogged him all over the country. I mean, we've gone at it. You know, Wayne and I got to, you know, associate with each other and we're friendly towards each other and so on. But he has made it very clear that he represents a conservative move towards a conservative philosophy, the Tea Party wants to wrap arms, and I never really understood it when you got like CPAC, the heart of conservatism in Washington, they go in and Dr. Paul wins that at 33% with the next person, 22%, Mitt Romney, and Sarah Palin down at 7%. He wants to wrap arms and legs around this Tea Party movement represented by Palin. I'm like, why? What is the, I don't understand. What is the, what's the promise there? Where, what's the deal that's been made? What is behind that? There's something else going on. I don't even need to understand it. I just want to point it out, because if I can point that out and say, look, this is the path that they want to take you, after this, and we can finally cut off that boat anchor. We can finally say, you know, it's very, 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 very neon flashing, obvious, clear that the Libertarian Party no longer represents libertarianism. Now it has the opportunity to be a hydra. It can just sprout up all over the place as it already has. This is going to, now, if we do get someone that represents libertarianism and the LNC board change, we're going to go, we're going to challenge the cult. We're going to go toe-to-toe with these guys. We are not afraid, because they, that's what they're afraid of. The collectivists are afraid of an infection into the mind of the American people that understands that the government is not the solution. It is the problem. You know, the old Reagan thing, man. He's like, look, they're not the answer. They're the problem. And when that happens, there is no program. There is no amount of money. There's no amount of heavy handedness. There is no amount of militarism, police state, whatever, that is going to stop it. And it's going to get messy. I want a revolution, a peaceful alternative. We don't have to challenge them. We just, you know, it, to be able to be in charge of the ring. I don't want to wear the ring. I want to do away with the ring. So this mentality is something that happens in your head. It's not something that happens on a piece of paper or a group making a vote. And they keep advocating that that is what we need. We need to have a memo. We need to have a press release. We need to, yeah, how's that been working out? Get your butt out in the street and let's go whip ass. Well, that's what we're going to do, regardless of what happens. So but you can understand from my perspective, knowing, having the confidence that the Levolution was going to take off like it did, that the people were going to be educated, that the youth were going to embrace this. If you know that is what has already happened, what you need to do is to make it clear which side everybody's on, so we're not wasting time. Because the old joke goes, you know, what's the difference between an anarchist and a libertarian? About 6 or 7 years if you're paying attention. And the reason is because those that come into the Libertarian Party, they go through, you know, 2-3 election cycles and they go, you know, this isn't what I was attracted to, and what, and they go off and they'll join and do whatever else. And they have. They will. The Levolution was started with a bunch of libertarian activists here and around the country that we work with, including you. So I'm going, this is, I'm so ecstatic. I'm very excited about the future. I'm very excited about the circumstances and what we have to offer. But we have to make it clear, as I've been busting my butt doing and recording every word that's come out of mine and Wayne Allen Root's mouth, to make it clear what the decision is. I don't see the decision itself as being what, which way they go as being a determining factor of what happens, as much as it makes it clear where everybody is at in this Levolution that's coming. So when we go to St. Louis, we're just going to have fun. I've already accomplished what I wanted. Already done it. Done. So they go, well, how do you think your vote is going to be? How do you think the people? I don't know. Don't care. That was not my point. My whole goal was to make the decision clear. I've accomplished that. I win already. Don't even care what the vote totals are.
Well, and I think that's it's wonderful that you've done that, Ernie, because somebody didn't need to speak out. And, you know, I'm not someone who normally goes around criticizing my fellow libertarians, but I also felt a need to speak out because, you know, this is a little different situation, and we need to be we need to understand what it is that we are getting ourselves into, and that is, you know, that's our whole party, I believe, will rise or fall on us being true to our principles. And if we're not going to do that, and we're going in a direction that will take us there. I think those in the know who have been here for a while need to speak out. And so I'm really, really appreciative of everything you've done. And that's why for once in my life I've actually spoken out against someone as opposed to supporting their efforts.
Well, everybody has a role, and I'm just wanted to, you know, give an opportunity for people to express themselves. But the one thing that I want to, you know, I give you an example. Whenever we run campaigns here in Arizona, this last weekend we spent a lot of time going on about getting people on the ballot. We need to do petitioning and everything. We just met at my house and we had a little barbecue and everybody like go out for 3 or 4 hours, get the signatures, come back and party, and we're done. So we made sure we get, you know, got enough signatures to make sure everybody that we wanted to make sure got on. So we're done with that. Now we have other opportunities after this deadline to do write-ins in the primary to get printed on the general election ballot. There's all kinds of games that we can play later. But the thing that I wanted to provide as an opportunity for everyone that I come in contact with here in Arizona, around the country, whatever, is that we're already winning. You know, they go, oh, they keep going on about the government computer results in the form of vote totals. And I'm going, vote totals and money and energy and involvement and activism and all that stuff is a side effect of freed mind. Side effect, not the source of it.
Exactly. Exactly. And that's where we have to focus our attention, is on getting people's attention and helping them understand what liberty really means. Because once they do that, they're not going to put up with what they have now.
Yeah, how do you unlearn the truth? You know, you get the truth. Oh, Mary, you'll like this. I want to get your comment on this. We have these little cards that has, Revolution logo on and so on. And it just has a saying. And on the back of my business cards, you know, for Freedom's Phoenix, it says, you know, Lovolution logo, and it says, we know the truth. And what has been amazing to me is the type of people that will come and say, yeah, truth? What's the truth? What truth? And anytime I engage someone like that in conversation, it's always this kind of subjective thing that we need to, it's all in politics, and we need to kind of couch it in, you know, they're always justifying something that they want to accomplish, when the point that I'm making is just, don't lie. I mean, we know what reality is. You know, I don't know, should I change it to we know the facts? I mean, you know, what? And you can't have love without trust, and you can't have trust without truth. And you can't, to me, the truth is so important, and they want to avoid it because it's painful. We don't want it. Oh, this is a big thing. Man, if Ernie's elected national chair, you know, he'll give ear to these 9/11 truther guys. No, can't do that. And I'm like, why? I just want to know. Oh, I'll run away from that like crazy. Wayne, man, no, heck no. We're not going to. He will not talk about bringing troops home about the war. No, we're not going to talk about war because war is popular with conservatives. We're not going to talk about eliminating foreign policy because, well, then that means no money for Israel. Can't do that. And we're not going to talk about the decriminalization of drugs because, you know, that's too controversial. We're not going to. I'm going, what the heck are we going to talk about?
Well, we're certainly not going to be talking about the non-aggression principle if he is chair. That's one of the things that was missing from his book. And that would have, you know, that would have really changed the whole nature of it for me. Because, you know, that's where we're coming from. That's our philosophy. And without that, we really are just another set of politicians mouthing the words.
Well, I'm hoping that you're not so invested in the Libertarian Party that you're missing all the opportunities of the libertarian movement.
No, I'm certainly not, Ernie. I'm, you know, as you know, I'm chair of the International Society for Individual Liberty, and I'm working with Jeff Rossi at Young Americans for Liberty. So I'm pretty spread out.
No, that's where, you know, a lot of the action is going to be. That's another thing. The anti-war movement. Where the heck did that go? And why are we wanting to be the third war party? That's what got me running to begin with. What got me out of Arizona and willing to go to Nashville and say, are you kidding me, was in 04. You know, a lot of people don't know. I ran for national chair in 04, 06, 08, and now 10, just espousing it. I'm going, you guys don't know what's coming. I mean, you have no freaking clue what's coming. And it won't happen all at once, but it will happen overnight. All of a sudden, you'll go, what the heck just happened? Well, here it is. Hello, been telling you. And in 04, when the Libertarian Party thought they were going to what? We're going to be more palatable to the something if we... War's okay a little bit. You know, if we, you know, America, MK, yeah, we're going to support some kind of war. A little bit of war, a little Afghan war kind of war. And I go, oh, heck no. And now... we have the anti-war movement needs somebody to take advantage of it. And I say, we can. We'll talk about more when we come back.
Freedom's the answer. What's the question? You're listening to Ernest Hancock.
There's something happening here. What it is ain't exactly clear. There's a man with a gun over there, telling me I got to beware. I think it's time we stop, children. What's that sound? Everybody look what's going down.
Yeah, here on Declare Your Independence, we're taking a break, stopping, looking around, seeing what's up. And I tell you what's up. You know, the war machine, that's what's up. And it's just going to keep getting worse and worse and worse and worse until somebody says, no mas. And, where is the anti-war movement now, Mary? What happened?
Well, it's still out there, but unfortunately it's not very strong in the LP. This is the first big rift, I think, that we had back when the Twin Towers came down and we invaded Afghanistan. There were a lot of libertarians who felt that this was an appropriate self-defense measure. I remember moderating a debate at the National Convention in 2002, I believe it was. It might have been 2004. Can't quite remember. Anyhow, I remember there was very heated and emotional discussion, and it was very difficult for some libertarians to see the other viewpoint. So I think we lost a lot of our credibility then, and a lot of our members in addition. And so this, you know, there's just been things along the way like this that have really divided us, and I find it very sad because, you know, I'd like to see us more united. But as you know, you and I talked, Ernie, the good news, the very good news, is the liberty movement has grown so big, and it's out there in such kind of media like the Internet that it's not a secret anymore. It's not able to be squelched, I think, at this point in time, and that is excellent news. It can only get better.
You know, one thing you probably, I don't think I've told you, I'm working with Angela Keaton. She used to be on the LNC. She's with the antiwar.com now. I go today to sign contracts for where we did the Freedom Summit, and we're doing the Freedom Summit again in this December, and we'll be announcing that. And the Labor Day weekend, we worked out a deal with them, kind of doing both conferences and so on. Labor Day weekend, we're doing an anti-war peace conference here in Phoenix.
Mm-hmm.
And they're going, well, we don't want to go to Arizona because they passed immigration law. So I'm going, all the more reason to come here and partay. We're going to have make fun of them too. So this is an opportunity for us to really express our support of freedom, and it doesn't matter who gets elected national chair. I already know what's going to happen. The anti-war movement is they still have a core, and it's going to open up to a lot. But there's some people that say, no, you'll lose the what? I don't know, is the people that are pro-war. And I'm like, okay, and your point? I mean,
right. I mean, it's really a decision. Do we want to be leaders? Does the LP want to lead, or do they just want to play politics and fall apart? Because that's really what our choice is here, and I hope the LP will choose to lead. But if not, then at least we know that a lot of good has been accomplished and the movement is alive and well.
Yes, and that's where we can take solace. And I just want to make sure that people understand, you know, the LP was a liberty nexus. It was for me at one time. I thought I was all alone out there for probably 3 years before I even heard the word libertarian. I was advocating for that, and I had all the questions. You know, I asked, yeah, what about, what about, what about, what about? And finally it got to where I go, oh, I get it. Freedom's the answer. What's the question? You know, that's where that came from. It was just a revelation I had. You know, if you default to freedom, you know, you're always right. And I'm going, okay, yeah, I'm good with that. I don't have a problem with that. But now we're in a situation to where we're advocating, a lot of people advocating bad things, and they want to use the libertarian brand to help them advocate it. And I saw my role as I'm really good at no. I just want to highlight it. I want to make sure it's clear to everyone. And Mary, you've helped me make it clear in a lot of ways over many years. And I want to thank you for your efforts. And thanks for coming on the show. I think 2 hours went by really fast.
It did, Ernie. I'm glad to be here. I hope your listeners have a great day. And please keep up the good work.
Thanks. We'll see you tomorrow.